hills. Ain't no smoggy smoke on Rocky Top. Ain't no telephone bills. Once I had a girl on Rocky Top, half bear, the other half cat. Wild as a mink, but sweet as soda pop. I still dream about that. Rocky Top, Tennessee. Once two strangers climbed old Rocky Top looking for a moonshine still. Strangers ain't come down from Rocky Top, reckon they never will. The corn won't grow at all on Rocky Top, dirt's too rocky by far. That's why all the folks on Rocky Top get their corn from a jar.
Background, so girl,
brand new second hand.
Don't you show? crazy. You're just a brand new second hand. Yes, girl. No man, no one. Brand new second hand.
Could've used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high, way up firm and high. Out past the cornfields where the woods got heavy, out in the back seat of my 60 Chevy, working on mysteries without any clues. Working on a night moves. Trying to make some front page driving news. Working on a night moves. In the summertime. Some high in the sky song. We were just young and restless and bored, living by the sword. And we'd steal away every chance we could, the back room to the alley of the trusty woods. I used her, she used me, but neither one cared. We were getting our share, working on a night moon. Trying to lose the awkward teenage blues. Working on a night moves. And it was summertime. Sweet summertime, the lightning, yeah. Waited on the thunder, waited on the thunder. I woke last night to the sound of thunder.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We have a special guest in the studio with us today, Ray Tangoy, and we're going to be having, I think, a call-in from Berkeley activist Carol Denny on the upcoming Berkeley anti-homeless laws. But at the top of the list is the successful meal we had, the emergency breakfast at Highway 1 and Highway 9, which was attended not only by, I don't know, 40 or 50 homeless people and hardworking Food Not Bombs and Huff staff, but also 10 or 15 police officers and highway patrol officers who didn't eat our food. More on that as we get into the show.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. Or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Today is June 18th, 2015. In the studio with me is my guest, a former user of the homeless, what I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center at 115 Coral Street, Ray Tangoy. Is that correct, Ray?
That is correct.
And you, you and I, you came to the last Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, as you have to several before that, number before that. You've been concerned about some of these issues around civil rights. And then we met up again today at the emergency breakfast that is done to draw concerns to services being cut back, which in spite of some more reassuring transmissions from Janin Thomas, the executive director of the what I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center, there still seems to be threats to, or at least an intention, of not restoring the meals, the laundry, the showers, the 24-hour bathrooms to those who are not actually clients there. We have a caller, though. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Roy.
Hello, it's Carol Denny calling from the city of Berkeley.
And you're not, you were arrested before, but you're not currently in chains.
Not in chains. Yay! It's a good day.
Today, actually, we had no less than 10 to 15 police officers and highway patrol officers observing but not sampling our food as we attempted to set up and actually were driven off the area where we served food before. But we finally refused to go any further than the sidewalk, and they backed off. So it was.
Good heavens! Where were you?
Well, we were, you know, on the intersections of Highway 1 and 9 on a kind of an area we'd served at a week ago on Monday and Thursday mornings, trying to draw attention to the fact that they're cutting back even the what I consider to be abusive and limited shelter services that already exist, and so they can, I don't know what they're going to do with that money.
So this was a free speech demonstration.
Oh,
with
big time.
Food. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And when we explained that to the officers, first the Highway Patrol decided it had jurisdiction of property inside the city of Santa Cruz, which was a new thing to me. But they also wanted us to get off the sidewalk. At which point, you know, I said, no. we aren't.
Good.
You know, we in the spirit of, you know, of Chris McKinney and perhaps Carol Denny and a lot of other people, we said, no, we're not getting off the sidewalk. So.
And they backed down.
Well, they were, yeah, they did. To their credit, the Santa Cruz Police Department did not want to be involved, but the actual police chief himself, the highest mucky-muck in Santa Cruz, showed up and surveyed the scene from an august distance to keep an eye
on
things.
What an honor.
Oh, yeah, we, you know, I won't even get into my, yeah. It was unfortunate. I got there late because I got a speeding ticket, ironically.
How ironic.
And I was the first person who was actually warned by the officer to remove his vehicle from the area. He did so in a polite manner. This was a highway patrol guy.
Uh-huh.
But it was still, you know, and I gotta tell you, Carol, that that's probably going to be the main bubbly focus of this show, though I know that I did ask you to call in, and you let me know about an hour before the show.
No, I'm glad there was a demonstration. I'm glad you were honored by the presence of the chief of police. And if that's what you need to focus on tonight, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, no, but I also am interested in this. You seem to have, you've gotten, and we talked about earlier, I guess almost a week ago now, maybe so, the upcoming anti-homeless laws in Berkeley that are merely a pale copy of our really strong and vigorous get rid of them damn bums and get them disabled people out of sight, for God's sake.
That's right. Yeah. Santa Cruz, I'm afraid, is going to remain in the lead, because I'll just tell you very briefly and then call back another time when you have more time, that it looks to me, from a cursory look at our action calendar for June 30th, 2015, like the departing city manager gave a big FU to the city council and the Downtown Berkeley Association, because, boy, did she water down their wish list that was put in her lap a few months ago. March 17th is when these proposals came her way, and, well, it's clear that she gave it a lot of thought, because just about everything that they wanted has been watered down and made a lot less onerous.
Well, Carol, let's talk a little about that. I mean, you know, I appreciate your, you know, acknowledging, you know, that the whoop-de-doo of the moment is the latest police nonsense down here, but
that's so exciting.
Oh yeah, and it's always exciting when the police, you know, pull their shit, so to speak.
Well, I'm glad you're not in jail for one thing.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I'm really glad that you're highlighting the closure of the shelter. Jeepers.
Right, well, it's true, although there are mixed opinions. Some people feel the shelter should have been burned down years ago. It's such a wretched place.
Others, I understand.
But others feel, you know, it serves a purpose. And so there's a mixed feeling, but there certainly is a feeling that the laws that criminalize everybody else outside the shelter, and that's 90-95% of the homeless population each night, and 100% or 98% each day.
Especially with Santa Cruz's laws, you know, that's really absurd, that what sleep is criminal, but like the shelters, they're closed.
Yeah, so, but let me ask you about you know, the Berkeley situation. Our city manager was likely to go in the other direction. I mean, you know, yours apparently doesn't want the city to be embarrassed with lawsuits. Of course, you actually have attorneys up there who are willing to do lawsuits, like Ocean Newman, who's currently, you know, challenging 647E.
Yeah, not connected to the city, just to be clear. But yes, we, although lawsuits are harder to do, and the easiest, most cost-effective thing, as you know well, is to nip these things in the bud at the council level. So that's where we are right now.
Right, and it's, you know, we haven't had, I'm trying to think of many new anti-homeless laws that have actually come up. Mostly the anti-homeless actions have been by bureaucratic agencies, such as the first ever 24-hour parking ban, ironically right next to the Homeless Lack of Services Center, the very place where we've been, and the surrounding streets. Yeah.
Boy, they're not subtle in your town.
Well,
they
try to be very straightforward, I've been trying to get an answer for them. I appealed their decision. That it would be difficult for disabled people to hobble three blocks to go to the Homeless Lack of Services Center, but they haven't yet responded to my appeal, except I've heard from a nervous council member, though he will not show me the emails or any of the documents, that they've actually rejected it, but it's all being done on a hush-hush, need-to-know basis.
I gotta say, you guys are the king.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to repression, look to Santa Cruz. They lead the way. Yeah.
Well, you yourself have been out there on the front lines, not just 20 years ago when we first met, and that, generally speaking, 25 or 24 or something.
Yeah, a long time back, 35. Yeah, but who's counting?
Yeah, I know. Santa Barbara is where you hail from Santa Barbara, right?
No, I'm not from Santa Barbara. I'm from East L.A., but
oh, wow.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
I just remember I ran into you down there in 1992, and that's, you know, where I was working with the Legal Defense Center. I guess your mom was living down there. I don't know the story.
That's right. There have been issues all the way up and down the California coast, so I try to get around and be as helpful as I can, as do you.
But you yourself are facing, do you want to talk about your current legal situation, or is that something you'd rather not get into? What's your story on that?
Oh, it doesn't really matter. I think I was one of many, many people who showed up to defend People's Park back in 1991. Actually, much, much earlier than that, I was a part of many, many efforts to protect the park over the years. But in 1991, when they tried to install volleyball courts and turn it into a sports facility, they decided to try a new tactic, which was to sue in a slap suit, four of us, and I was one of those people. So until then, the police didn't really know me and certainly would never have described me as any kind of a public safety issue, but that's sure what they do now about, you know, any chance they get. So I'll just probably spend an eternity being falsely charged with this and that, and they're going to have trouble ever convicting me of anything. Well, so I have a long arrest history with no conviction.
You got a rap sheet. You got a rap. But unfortunately, it doesn't rap too deep, I guess, huh?
No, it doesn't really. As a matter of fact, at this point, it's sort of like a point of pride. And if they ever manage to actually convict me of something, I'm going to buy them all a round of beer, because, boy, have they put a lot of public money into trying.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, as I said earlier in the show, the police nonsense is really, I mean, it gives us publicity, it shows the repression of the state, but it doesn't really, you know, and it kind of, through its own awkwardness and, you know, clumsiness and violence, it kind of draws attention to what we're doing. But what is it that you've been doing up there in Berkeley for the last year that has drawn the attention of authorities? More important, that should draw the attention of the community that we may learn from here in Santa Cruz, or at least educate ourselves on what's going on in Berkeley.
Well, I think you are doing it. I think what I see, one of the things that I see you doing and many other activists California-wide and nationwide is really getting your nose dirty, reading so many city documents that you know the rules. So once you know the rules and how contradictory they are, how impossible they are to comply with for even a well-meaning, organized individual, then you can, especially if you are a good writer and an articulate voice, you can work with communities who are targeted by the police, and we have many in this town, as I know you do in yours, to make sure that people who aren't paying as close attention have a chance to tell the story. So I think of myself as a writer, certainly a songwriter as well, but as someone who can illustrate, even graphically, I do a lot of artwork, try to illustrate the civil rights violations and just injustices going on in community-wide. And I think we're seeing a period of honest upheaval regarding the willingness of people to put up with it in their community. Certainly that's happening in Berkeley, and I think it's happening nationwide.
Well, what exactly specifically do you think has drawn your attention for the last year? I mean, we know about these, a little bit about these ordinances. They're, as I've said, I would call them a weaker version of Santa Cruz's ordinances, but they're still nasty ordinances designed to drive away people from Telegraph, Shattuck, downtown business districts.
Yeah. Any attribute that is typical of people who are poor, people who are homeless, people who might have an addiction struggle, people who might have a mental illness. These are not identical groups, and they are sometimes overlapping groups. But those people are more present on the streets than people who are so wealthy they could be chauffeured wherever they need to go. So those groups end up vulnerable to police harassment in special ways. And I think that's just something I'm aware of and sensitive to, and working very hard to fight. Well, and I'm not alone. I mean, we're lucky as a community that we do have a Commission on Homelessness, which is revitalized now. Like, finally, they've stopped trying to plant people on it who are opposed to its mission, which was the case for a solid 6 years. It was kind of funny. Same with the Peace and Justice Commission. We used to get some people planted on there who, like, they finally just gave up trying to insist on injustice. You know, that's a hard thing to do. And it's also the same with the Police Review Commission. So those are three very powerful commissions, along with a Commission on Mental Illness, who are now, for the first time in my tenure in Berkeley, which goes long, it's over 40 years now, These are groups working hard, working honestly, and in, this is the key, in coordination with each other to try to create community-wide policy change. And if you're not seeing that in Santa Cruz, oh, believe me, we didn't see it up here either for the longest time. But once you have clear hearts who are interested in finding solutions together, seeing what works, boy, do you get some traction. And so I'm thrilled, really, really thrilled to be meeting people who come from these other arenas who share my concerns about how ridiculously extreme our community has become. And I have to say, I still give credit to Santa Cruz for being even more extreme.
Big time, big time. I know you mentioned earlier that there was sort of a moderation of the 10-foot stayaway areas, or forbidden zones, as I call it, for panhandling from the parking meter posts that you have.
Yeah.
I should explain, in Berkeley there are, as in some cities, you don't pay a parking meter as you do in Santa Cruz. You buy a little slip that gives you time, and you put it on the dashboard of your car, and there are these sort of, you know, these stands up and down the street.
The parking gods, the big parking totems that are almost, they're about as tall as I am, and they're about every 35 feet. Throughout the downtown.
But you see, you don't have, Carol, the exciting real change meters that encourage people to avoid panhandlers and stick their pennies and pass them on to the homeless lack of services center and such places.
I love those things. I think that's so funny.
They're big red meters. And these also have not 10-foot no forbidden zones, which even your city manager thought was kind of a little excessive. We have 14-foot forbidden zones, and we have the same forbidden zones around benches, buildings,
kiosks. Badass, but 14 feet, wow, somebody's got me beat is all I can
That's
say.
That's for sure. So we're talking with Carol Denny. I don't think we have another line in, but we might. You can try, any listeners who want to have any questions or comments or exclamations of any kind. 469-3119 is the in line, maybe. If not, you're just going to have to try emailing me, and I will try to keep an eye on the email in case there are any questions for you, Carol, or for Ray here, who is a survivor of the Homeless Lack of Services Center and a user of their services here. And he's also, you know, concerned about civil rights here in Santa Cruz, and he's been, you know, showing up at our tumultuous and often ineffectual but still outspoken HUF meetings that happen.
Terrific.
Every
well, a
week.
Salute to Ray and to you, Robert, and thank you. I'm taking up a lot of your radio time, but really glad to talk to you. And I think it's safe to suggest that it might be true from my cursory read of what the city manager did with the suggested anti-homeless laws, that this is a watered-down version that is going to really upset the Downtown Berkeley Association. So it's giving me kind of a smile.
You actually get your advanced look at this. It's more than 10 days, about 10 days before it's due to come up on the Berkeley City Council agenda, right?
Yeah. So and I may be wrong. I mean, I'm wrong to get any joy out of looking at this only because, I mean, tens of thousands of dollars are being spent even paying city attorneys to pour through the ordinances and dress them up and stuff like this. It's an extraordinary abuse of public policy for them to pay so much attention to what the most vulnerable people in town who is like, oh, what they'd love. It's just to have a key to their own place to go home to so they would not have to bother anybody. But what I love is that our city manager, who is exiting for the greener pastures of Oakland, thank you, has decided that Berkeley is not where she wants to work anymore and is going to a lesser paid position in Oakland. And that sends a message in and of itself, has decided to take the most stringent thing they could come up with, the most poorly written, I mean, the anti-blanket law is what it was in March, and basically say, well, if you want to know what people can do with blankets and bedding and so forth, go check the part of the law that's about blocking things, which basically says, no, we're not going to criminalize blankets. So that's my take. I'm not a lawyer, and perhaps other people will.
Carol, you're lagging behind Santa Cruz. This is very depressing for those who want to see some militancy here.
We're trying to recover from
a recession here, and you are impeding with serious problems. I notice, however, by the way, you didn't get into the specifics for the last year, which your own personal activism, which some of which can be found through, gleaned through the satire in your Pepper Spray Times, some that comes
definitely.
Out every month. People
well,
can get
can
it online.
You, basically, can I tell you what happened yesterday?
I guess. Go ahead.
This is what I do. This is what I do. And this is why the police hate me. You know, I was downtown. I was walking through Civic Center Park and noticing that, they were really cracking down on the very few people who had a lot of belongings or a shopping cart full of stuff with them. And I thought, what's up? And then I figured out that it was about, they were about to have a memorial for the people who died in the balcony collapse. And I crossed the street at one point, and I'm looking at these two bicycle officers, which I hadn't seen in quite a while. You know, they go in tandem. They're all dressed up in, like, a whole police uniform, but with bicycle shorts, which makes them look a little silly. So I cross the street, and there's this guy who is using an electronic cigarette device, and, like, there's so much smoke coming out that it's wreathing these two police officers. And I thought, well, that's pretty comic. They're not saying a word to the guy. And we criminalized e-cigarette use as well as conventional tobacco use in public places way back in October. And the conventional cigarette prohibition in commercial districts was back in 2008. So I just said, hey, you mind letting that guy know about the law? And they go, oh, well, he's using a vaping device, which is not criminal. And I go, oh, yeah, it is. It has been for more than 6 months. And they go, oh, no, that's perfectly okay. And I said, well, you seem very sure of yourself. And he goes, oh, yeah, we know the law. We know the law. Well, I know the law. Within an hour, I had confirmed with the city attorney, American Lung Association, American Heart Association, Americans for Non-Smokers, you know, I was at the meeting where they adopted the law, and 30 days later, they enacted the law. So I got all the documentation of this, and I sent it as a policy complaint right away to the Police Review Commission, and sent a copy to the city manager, and sent a copy to the city council, and, sent a copy to the chief of police. They hate my guts, because they have an obligation to at least find out when the city council...
Let me ask you, Carol, was this individual who was flagrantly violating the law with the V-ing, was he a homeless-looking person or a relatively
well-to-do
person?
Yeah, well-dressed city employee, right on the city hall, actually he was smoking a conventional cigarette.
You know, what you should have done really very clearly was pointed out to the cops that this is just a clever disguise by a homeless person, at which point they would have immediately moved to arrest the man.
You're right. Well, I should have thought of that.
You failed
divine.
Again, Carol. You know, I really had hopes for you, but yeah. Actually, I do want you to call back. Is it possible to get you to call back on Sunday? Or I know we're taking up a lot of your time, and frankly, I'd rather see you kicking the ass of the city than.
Well, I'll try to call back Sunday. What time would you like?
Any time between 9:30 and 1. And if you want to listen in on the to the show, it is available on computer. If you have computer access, do you have computer
Sunday
access?
Between 9:30 and 1. I do have a computer.
FreakRadio.org. FreakRadio.org is where we broadcast. You can kind of decide where you want to slip
cool.
in.
Okay. And, I'll write that down, too. And thank you so much for letting me talk to y'all.
No. Thank you for calling in, man.
Have a good night.
All right. You too.
Good night,
Carol.
Bye-bye. And that was Carol Denny. And, of course, I didn't check the email. Let's see if anything came in. I don't think anything did. Let me double check. No, we do have an email from Andy Carcella, who was on the show about a week and a half ago with, or maybe it was a week and a half ago, I think it was, with Stefan Nelson, who, by the way, for those who are worried about Stefan, there was some concern he had disappeared and he couldn't be found. There apparently has been a Stefan Nelson sighting or Facebook entry from him that he's had some hospital problems, and he's apparently, I have not verified this is still second-hand information, but I'm told that he's you know, not disappeared, not dead, not jailed, not embezzled money and flown to Venezuela, nothing of that kind. He's supposedly still on, you know, on track. And this is important for us. And indeed, there's going to be a mass meeting on Sunday, another meeting at the Food Not Bombs meal, which serves every Saturday and Sunday in Santa Cruz at the main post office from 4 to 6, at 6:30 to further sort of sketch out what's going to be happening the week after. I think it was slated for Sunday the 28th for the camp out, the community camp out to begin, which is a protest not merely against the closing of the services for, there was originally an announcement that the Paul Lee Loft would be closed, that the Paige Smith Community House would be closed or severely cut back, but and also that services for walk-in people who are wanting on a meal or want to use the laundry room, mail, toilet services, showers, that would also be cut off, even though the total amount of loss of the Homeless Lack of Service Center budget was less than 10% or 15% of the budget. But they somehow feel they have to spend a huge amount of money on salaries and other, I'm not sure what the hell they spend it on, because I can't get Jan and Thomas to send me the budget still. Although I have to say, Jan and Thomas has come through with a statement, not to me, I got it through secondary sources, but it was supposedly a public statement, though it didn't appear in the Sentinel or anywhere else yet that I know of, which I'm going to read on the air after a musical break. So don't go away, you're going to hear Jan's latest. But the point is that this protest and this campout is sort of a melding of different groups who are concerned about the right of homeless people to rest, to sleep, to survive at night, and I suppose also during the day, and something that has been ignored as a priority, and not just ignored, actively prosecuted in Santa Cruz through such laws as the Santa Cruz City Sleeping Ban, Municipal Code 6.36.010A, the blanket ban, 6.36010B, the camping ban, 6.36010C, the state law against lodging, which is used a lot against protesters, but also against homeless individuals, 647E, it's a misdemeanor, and a series of additional codes voted by the city, which responded to the courts in Santa Cruz, actually statewide, but at least specifically in Santa Cruz County, which decided they were wasting time by arresting homeless people on warrants for sleeping ban offenses because they just go out and sleep the next night, and it was costing a lot of money to put to jail them for not showing up in court because they couldn't run around and do all this stuff at the same time. And even if they did show up in court, what are they going to say? I'm too poor to even pay the community options fines. You might think, well, community options is an alternative to paying a fine. That's community service. But there is a racket in Santa Cruz called community options, which you actually have to go to an organization and pay them for the privilege of what I call is community slavery, or they call it community service, for the crime of sleeping at night when there are no legal places for homeless people to sleep for the overwhelming majority of them. And that includes the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Now, there are 46 spaces in the Paul Lee Loft, or have been. I think it's now due to be shut down for a while and then reopened. And there's also, I think, some 40-odd spaces in the Paige Smith Community House. You would know more about that, Roy. I guess you haven't had a chance to say a word the entire half hour you've been in the studio. What's going on in Paige Smith?
Well, I'm quite concerned because I was at that location when it was under construction. And the contract workers there at the time were filling me in what was going on and said the old retired military guy that I was taking care of at the time that says, you ought to get him to apply here, and you could apply yourself. And so we eventually did, and then we found out that we were turned down. I says, for what reason? This is, oh, we can't tell you that. So I saw some problems early with that whole idea. Different people that have known me for some years come up and says, what are you doing around here now? And I says, well, I'd fill them in. He says, no. This is not for you. This is for people who just come out of prison. And I said, are they telling the some of the tenants here what some of their housemates are going to be? He says, oh, they're not allowed to talk about that. So that was another problem. And I had a direct contact with a gentleman one night who was a serious alcoholic, and he came in real late, and he was very drunk. He made 8 attempts to kill me and was trying to convince me that because he was from L.A., he could kill me so easily. And stupidly, I just kept stepping out of his way where I should have just dropped him to the floor and then hauled him out and says, here's a problem you got to take care of now. I went down to the police department the next day, and I was insulted. They said, why didn't you call 911? I said, we're told we don't call 911. That's what we have security there for. So I was very disappointed with these few little things that I was seeing. And in some cases, it got worse. I, being very knowledgeable about construction work and repairs and that, I'd say, you got a problem here, here, and here. Let me take care of that. Oh, no, you can't do that. How do you know I don't know how to do that? Or why are you saying I can't? Was it a permission thing? And it was the whole situation was ridiculous. When I was involved with Habitat for Humanity, Monterey, we had a lot of materials. And I'd say, you need this, electrical stuff and plumbing. I've got more than I can handle that I'm warehousing down there. And you can get this free. Well, how can you get it free? Well, I'm a board member, and I'm more active than anybody else down there, and nobody's going to argue with me. Any homeless center that needs stuff, including in the Monterey area, I would step in and say, I can fix that appliance. It's not working. By tomorrow, it'll be working. And people would join me. No arguments. They said, let me give a hand here. You'd be surprised how many women wanted to help out. And I had a lot of school teachers that were spending their Saturdays coming down and helping us and say, well, we can do this, this, and this. And it made me a believer quickly that you get the right people and you can solve any problem. Here, I'm wondering why we're getting responses that are so ridiculous. I'm understanding it a little bit more, but it has cost me almost everything I've ever acquired in my life, being disabled for 27 years and being in a homeless situation. Most of my valuables have all got taken away from me. 14 vehicles, a lot of my tools, a lot of my stuff got stolen. Can't do anything about it. My long-time paid-up life insurance was taken away from me. Nobody even clued me in, but because I had a license to sell roofing jobs in the state of California, they determined that I owed a lot of money for taxes. I made $500. I didn't even break even. And they said, well, we did you a favor. I says, how's that? Well, we didn't try to put you in prison because you didn't tell us about you withheld information. I said, no. I didn't withhold any information. I did not have any income with this. Like I said, I didn't even break even.
Ray, let me interrupt you and ask. I'm interested in this background. Indeed, that's one of the reasons I asked you on the show, is actually to give some sense of how you feel things have changed from the, I guess you were around during the Karen Gillette days, or
yeah.
The Homeless Community Resource Center, which preceded the current Homeless Services Center, or lack of shelter center, lack of services center, as I occasionally, frequently call it, regularly call it, actually. But I also, right now what I'm about to do is take a musical break, and I was pointing out that there's a smaller number of beds that are being cut away, and as well as, more important to me, or as important, the access to meals, although some say, well, there are meals everywhere in Santa Cruz, you're never going to go hungry. It still, I think, is a significant impact, and it's likely to overburden other services that these meals are cut. And in fact, the original origin of the Homeless Lack of Services Center and its predecessor, the Homeless Community Resource Center, was a thing called Free Meal, which was the city's attempt to drive away food servers who were serving downtown at the town clock as a protest action in order to demand the city stop arresting people for sleeping and also stop violence against the homeless, police violence. And there was a third issue, like open a shelter. They wanted to open a shelter as well. This was in 1988. And as a consequence, the city created what's called Free Meal on the site of what is now the homeless, the bays of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And that became the Homeless Community Resource Center under Karen Gillette, who was assigned this Free Meal. And then it became under Ken Cole and Monica Martinez, and before that, Doug Loiselle, Claudia Brown, Letitia Schwartz, and now Jan and Thomas, the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which the major impetus for their creation was meals. And, you know, it would have been nice if there really were access to shelters. And indeed, ironically, in the place where you were living in Page Smith, is that right, for a while?
I was there for 18-month period.
When was the last time you were there?
Approximately 1965.
You mean
2005.
2005, well, yeah, I did that too. Let's hear what we hear from the public. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Ray.
Hey, Uncle Robert. Hey, Ray. I just wanted to call to say that, you know, today's been quite a day. I was woke up this morning with a call from New Mexico of this impending crisis of 20 or 30 police about ready to bust everybody's heads and arrest everybody.
10 or 15, actually.
And then I started getting feedback from the actual event, and it sounds like we had a day of success, and so I'm going to enjoy today and be dancing and celebrating.
Very
because
good.
It sounds to me like it's very rare that we have peace and justice in the air and we have success, so we should celebrate it whenever we do have success.
You're right on.
Okie dokie, okie.
Thank you, David. Yeah, now I will be getting back to it, and I'm about to play some audio from today's events, which gives you more of my commentary. And, of course, you were there, Roy. But again, I just want to, I began a line of thought, and as usual, I wandered far away from it in order to give some historical background, which I tend to do. Sunday meeting that's coming up is a preparation for this community campout. And that's going to be at 6:30 on Sunday in front of the main post office this Sunday, and a week from that time on Sunday the 28th, was the tentative time when people were going to begin the community campout. There was some uncertainty about the date based upon a number of concerns. One of them was the whereabouts of Stefan Nelson, and that apparently has been resolved. But there's going to be more discussion about it and some more planning and some more input and hopefully some expansion of support on Sunday. And so I invite people to come on down 6:30 on Sunday to the meal. And then, well, the meal is between 4 and 6, but then after that, 6:30, there's the meeting, which is around right next to the meal. And that's something that I think we all need to work on. But the point is, this is not simply to, you know, maintain the budget for the Homeless Lack of Services Center. This is more a broader, our protest is a broader concern. It concerns that in part. Some people are doing that and joining this protest for that reason. Others believe that the Homeless Lack of Services Center is essentially, it was originally started to drive away a meal in the middle of the downtown because businesses didn't like it there. And it became, the pretext, you know, was the cover job was, oh, we're helping the homeless to do this and that and other things. And indeed, you know, there was some concerns about that, but they never, the idea that it actually provided any meaningful shelter for the amount of money that was spent, and the budget is over $3 million a year, according to the Sentinel story from 2 weeks ago. I can't get the budget for this year, as I've said. Thank you, Janet. Come on, let's send us the budget. I want to see it. And in fact, we are entitled to it because city money goes into this budget, and therefore, I believe, or at least Carol Denny, who you heard earlier on the show, advised us on one of the shows that we have access to it, and indeed, we're going to get it sooner or later. But the important thing is, you know, for me, how little money actually goes for real service and how much is going for policing services and security services, security gates and IDs, and also attempts to grab more money from the feds in order to, you know, then they shoehorn people into programs that essentially pathologize, medicalize, put the homeless in these special categories, which actually ignore the reality that these are displaced urban residents. These are people who are, because of the lack of jobs, because of income inequality, because of the fundamental failure to build housing and stop the rent profiteering racketing that goes on across the country. They don't have anybody to live, and instead, you know, it's all heaped on top of them. Oh, it's your fault. You did this. You have records. You have criminal records for sleeping outside, big guy. You know, woman, you can't, you know, you did this, you did that. You know, you can't. Therefore, you know, it's an attempt to evade real responsibility and to allow the status quo to continue rolling right along. And that is something that this community campout protest is going to say no to. with the obvious kind of talking point that you can't criminalize people for sleeping at night when there's no legal places for them to go. We've said this for years. You get people giving the most ridiculous responses who mostly the bureaucrats don't say anything when you say this. They just ignore you. And that's why people have to take action to do anything. That's why rational argument doesn't have any impact on these folks. You don't need to rationally argue. You don't need to present 100 different plans about how wonderful Sanctuary Village is, for example, because they don't fucking care. That's the point. You know, they have other objectives. They're, you know, they've got big developers, big consultants, new hotels to build. You know, that's their objective. Yep. And that's what they do. That's how they spend your money, and that's how they spend their time. And that is how the machine in the city runs until people gum up the gears of the machine and indicate it ain't going to work at all if that is what it does, as Mario Savio put it back in 1964 at the University of Berkeley. Yet Cal. So that's going to be happening a week from Saturday is the actual community campout, unless the date changes. I'm not sure. There is some uncertainty about that, but less so, I think, than a day or two ago. And there's also a meeting to plan for this if you want to be a part of that on this coming Sunday. I mean, if I said Saturday, it's a Sunday that we're talking about. Sorry. Sunday the 28th is the campout, and Sunday the 21st is going to be the another planning session at 6:30, and it's an open public meeting about that. There's also a thing called Project Pollinate that is going to be happening. I guess Pollinate is actually throwing a large shindig in the park, the San Lorenzo Park, on Saturday from, I think it's 10 to 6, all day long. Huff is going to be there. I guess community campout people will be there. Sinbaras, SCORE, NAACP, ACLU, I don't know, everybody and their mother hopefully will be there. I'll probably be wandering around if I'm not going to a good movie or crashing out in a heap. Who knows? That's Saturday. Boy, I've got to get this straight here. Saturday, day after tomorrow, at the San Lorenzo Park from 10 to 6. The next day is Sunday, the meeting, 6:30. I got to do something else with my time here. 6:30 on Sunday is the meeting at the post office, and where we're going to firm up the issues of the campout. So think about going to one, two, or all three of these, and there'll be more information about this on Santa Cruz Indie Media. Before I turn to some musical break, Ray, do you have any thoughts?
Not at this point.
Okay. Well, let's get musical, and let's take a break, and we'll be back.
Four little angels of peace are we, loving our neighbors so peacefully. There's really no harm if we do not disarm, for we're always in close harmony. Four little angels of peace are we. There is one thing on which we agree, with foe or with friend we will fight to the end, just for peace, peace, peace.
Though we butchered the Boers on their own native shores and slaughtered the Irish no end, though on India we poured, slaying horde upon horde, we were playing the part of a friend. Yes, our arms we increase, but we're really for peace, except in the case of a crook. We conquered both spheres, now we're up to our ears, just trying to keep what we took.
Three little angels of peace are we, living together so blissfully. Oh, we never fight unless we're in the right, but we're always in the right, you see. Three little angels of peace are we. There is one thing on which we agree. Until we are wrecks, we'll break each other's necks, just for peace, peace, peace.
Generous might, but the emperor knows peace is finer. It isn't our fault, it's a case of our sword.
Two little angels of peace are we, living together in amity. We'll sign any pact saying we won't attack, but that's just a mere formality. Two little angels of peace are we. There is one thing on which we agree. We try to keep calm when we gas and we bomb just for peace, peace, peace. Now I know that a war is a thing to abhor, and that a peace will fill our cornucopia. With a love from the start, I adjusted did my part to civilize dear Ethiopia. Though you call me sadistic, imperialistic, my armies require a quarry. And though we may slay hordes of Spaniards each day, after all, don't we say that we're sorry?
Though I boil for the urge of a nice bloody purge, won't leave in my wake piles of carrion. Though I clean up my schmutz with a real Nazi putsch, it is all for the sake of the Aryan. My ambitions are small, I want nothing at all, my plans couldn't be any littler. Now that Austria's Nazi, it would be hutsy-tutsy to put the whole world under Hitler.
Four little angels of peace are we, reeking with odor of sanctity. Though we slaughter the meek, we confer every week, and we talk it over peacefully. Four little angels of peace are we. There is one thing on which we agree. With shot and with shell, we give each other hell just for peace.
And that was a historical flashback, of course, to the 30s when lefties in this country were attacking British imperialists and German militarists, Italian militarists, and Japanese militarists, of course, ignoring Stalinist militarists as well, or Stalinist repressivists. I would call them Stalinist purgists, what you will, and, of course, American imperialists. And nowadays, of course, we have a similar and even a more dangerous situation with NATO and the U.S. pressing in on Russia, and encouraging a neo-fascist regime in the Ukraine, and mounting a worldwide, quote, war on terrorism, where terrorism is defined as anybody who defies U.S. interests. And Funa Bombs is on the terrorist list, by the way, in case you want to become a local terrorist. You can. It's pretty easy. Just volunteer for Food Not Bombs. They need your help. Santa Cruz, Food Not Bombs. Of course, their form of terror is really education and edibles, but I guess there's a very broad definition. And I'm actually being accurate there. That's what McHenry, the co-founder, Keith McHenry, the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, has mentioned in the past, that he has been, you know, run into trouble as on one of their many lists. Now, he isn't on a kill list yet, as I know. He hasn't been droned, of course. But, you know, luckily for our safety and security, the U.S. government no longer has to, go through the courts to murder people. It just does. Of course, it never really had to go through the courts anyway. But it's now official. You know, you can, the Führer, I should say the president, has the right to do what he wishes. Let's go, however, down to the Highway 1 and Highway 9 region, which is where I was checking things out. I think my first recording is here. Let me see if we are actually in the right place. Let's try.
So it is about 10 o'clock. We have a Sergeant Bush is here, two Highway Patrol vehicles. And we have Officer Rue and Sergeant Bush. Rue, the Highway Patrol, is here. Hi, how's it going? Sergeant Bowles?
Yes, sir.
I'm Robert. How you doing?
Hey, Robert.
And that's another Highway Patrol officer that's arrived while I'm trying to whip out some chairs and set up a protest.
And what happened was I arrived late, as I said, because I was detained by another Highway Patrol officer and a speeding ticket. And frankly, I wasn't speeding, but that's another story. I don't think it was an example of political harassment. It was certainly a disagreement on safety on the highway, but that's another story, as I said. When I got to the Food Now Bombs Huff community campout protest, actually feeding, it was an emergency breakfast this morning. This is the corner of Highway 1 and Highway 9. You may, if you know that area, realize there's a large kind of barren area, somewhat shaded by trees, next to the fenced-off area where the homeless lack of services center's gated area begins. And that's where we served food on Monday and Thursday of last week. And it was fine. I mean, I think one of the security guards came around and said, it's okay if you stay here, no problem. But on this occasion, by the time I had gotten there, a highway patrol officer had come over and already told Abby Samuels, who is a Food Not Bombs activist, who's been putting a large contribution into this of energy and time, that they had to move over off to the side because it was a traffic hazard. It isn't a traffic hazard. It wasn't a traffic hazard. There was no indication there was a complaint. It was a traffic hazard. I think someone suggested, oh, well, he has to report this to his superior or something. I didn't buy that particular line, but the Highway Patrol used that, and then this became a more extensive argument that they couldn't be where they'd moved, which is a bit further into the dirt area where this open area is adjacent to Highway 1 and Highway 9 intersection down there. And I was asked to move my vehicle, and I said, well, I'm going to first unload some stuff and so forth. I was there before. I'm off the highway. I'm on private property. Yes, but we have an easement, said the Highway Patrol. It's private property, but we have an easement here. There always comes an issue when the police start making questionable, if not false, claims. Police agency, not the Santa Cruz police. They were not the agency here. It was the Highway Patrol. The issue is, what do you do? Do you simply, do you ignore them? Do you try to accommodate them? What do you do? I mean, if some ordinary community member came along and said, I don't want you here. You can't be here. As, for example, one individual did last week, screaming and shouting at us that we were bad, go away, that sort of thing. That was Brent Adams, who didn't go for what we were doing because it doesn't tie in with his Sanctuary Village strategy. You would think, well, this guy's kind of you regard the person as, should we say, if not acting irrationally, expressing simply his own view as to how things should be, and you could ignore it. But when somebody shows up with guns and radios and tasers, suddenly everybody is trained to, scurry like mice. And that, by the time I'd reached the meal at 10 o'clock, people had already moved the meal off to the side, making it far less visible or significantly less visible from the highway. At which point, that wasn't good enough for the Highway Patrol. They wanted us to move completely away from there, and they insisted we do so or be arrested for trespass. And I'm going to start playing some of this, and you can follow the drama as it develops. And the real drama here is not the Highway Patrol's absurdity or even, the exciting charisma of the police cars. Wow, ding, ding. Wow, wow, woo, woo. It's the fact that people are trying nonetheless, in spite of the interference of these armed thugs, to just do what is reasonable, helpful, under the circumstances, but which authorities regard as apparently a danger in the sense that, and again, I am giving you my interpretation. They didn't say this. But, for two full meals, Highway Patrol cars drove past this meal last week with no problems. I'm assuming they were Highway Patrol cars during the two-hour period between 10 and 12 last Monday and Thursday when we were there. But nobody stopped and complained. And we were there on the sufferance of, I guess, whoever owned the property. I presume it was a combination of the city and the Homeless Services Center. There's various people. It's a little confusing who had the title of the property. Maybe it isn't, but to me it's a little confusing. Over the years it's kind of changed. I'm not sure. But they had private security patrolling the area. The Homeless Lack of Services Center did, and he had no problem with us. Because he didn't want to mess with us, and I can appreciate that. Because the local police didn't, I think there is a certain understanding that, you know, although they're all up for harassing homeless people at night when ordered to do so, or when quote complaints come in, or when they just feel like doing it, they prefer not to attack large protests because that makes the media and dramatizes the very issue that we are raising, which is that police harass homeless people on a regular basis and those who support them. The objective is, it seems to be, at least from the policy guidelines that are laid down, to drive the poor out of sight, if not out of town. That seems to be, that's my interpretation. So I'll stop talking and I'll play some more of the audio. And again, it's me mostly narrating. If anybody wants to call in on this, of course they can, 427-3772. I'm also going to read Abby Samuel's description of what went down on an email she sent. And unless she calls in herself and wants to talk about it, and we will proceed from there.
Not quite clear what the property is. We moved the protest over a bit, apparently, from where it was before. How's it going, man? Hello. And we have about 10 people here. Hey. Sorry I'm late. I was stopped for a speeding ticket.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. What's cooking, Elise? Anything exciting?
I'm just trying to hold up signs and eat at the same time.
And you need a napkin for your chin. Okay. Morning.
Good morning. Oh, thank you.
Hey, no smiling downtown.
I know.
Come on now.
Probably a muni code violation.
Yeah, well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Are you in the car, Robert?
Sort of. Yeah.
Did it work for you?
Now, I was under pressure to move my vehicle. I was told I had to move my vehicle, but of course I had other things I had to do rather than move my vehicle from its perfectly safe and legal parking spot just because a California Highway Patrol officer had decided that that's what he wanted done. And so I did other things, like continued. I wasn't actually intentionally ignoring him. I was distracted by what was going on. The last voice you heard, the individual asked about, is this a new vehicle? Was Sergeant Bush. He's the individual who has arrested me at City Council for audio recording from the dais area. And I've talked about that on the air a lot. He's a nice guy. He's a friendly guy. But he is one of their mannequins. He is one of the individuals who follows their orders, even if they're unconstitutional, even if they're abusive and violate rights, at least in the cases I've seen involving me. He does. Now, on this occasion, he and the police department, who did show up in some numbers, in fact, the police chief himself showed up, Kevin Vogel, they only stood around and watched. They did not do anything. And one would hope that perhaps they were involved in even trying to ask the Highway Patrol to back off. You don't want to aggravate the situation more, because in the past, when police have arrested people for serving free food particularly, although this was in the distant past, we're talking 1988, 1989, and then again in 1992-93, it has prompted a response of vigorous intensification of the food serving. So it's actually, Food Not Bombs is losing volunteers, they need to get arrested so that more people can come down and help them out. That's what happened in San Francisco over a period of 6 or 7 years, from 1988 to 1995, when there were hundreds, actually over 1,000 arrests for people serving with Food Not Bombs in San Francisco. And then they generally stopped arresting people. That's the one place where I actually spent time in jail. It was in San Francisco in 1996. I was the only person to serve that amount of time in jail because I was foolish enough to demand my case go to court. The court eventually dropped all the other cases, although, as you know, for regular listeners, Food Not Bombs remains under threat in different cities, Orlando, Florida, and other places like Sacramento. There were recently threats. And it's always a matter of deciding whether you want to risk arrest to stand up for your rights, because that's what you do. You risk arrest. And a lot of people don't want to do that, and often for good reason. You know, they have jobs to get back to. They have, if they're homeless and they're relying on these abusive programs that have all kinds of restrictions like those at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, they're afraid of losing their tenancy there. Or maybe they're in the John Stewart Company's housing, you know, and they're afraid they're going to get an arrest record or something. So there is an increasing repression around these issues, and it's not an easy choice. So I don't want to suggest that. And there are other people that not wanting to get arrested is somehow a badge of shame or cowardice. It isn't. It can be a sign of prudence. You know, you have a family to support. These are issues. But, of course, in the past, a lot of advances have only happened because people were willing to do that. And, of course, the answer is yes, but they were in greater numbers. And that's true, although sometimes a few people taking a few actions does prompt a larger response. That's also true. So, let's hear some more, and I hope you enjoy it. And the call-in number here is 427-3772, but you're going to have to wait until we talk with this caller. Hey there, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Roy. Ray. Sorry. Hi.
I just got through reading your email about you trying to get arrested by the police, but they wouldn't do it.
Oh, did I? Oh, I don't think I tried to get arrested by the police.
You were down there on the corner.
Well, I was on the corner, but I advised people that if they wanted to avoid arrest but to stay there, move on to the sidewalk, even though the highway patrol said, you can't be on the sidewalk either, that's within our jurisdiction. I said, you know, good luck for arresting people for being on the sidewalk. That's a much more public venue, and we're protesting, so you're likely to run into trouble in the courts with that. And that, you know, but I mean, Abby Samuels was willing to be arrested on the property as we have a right to be there. The property isn't being used. There was no problem there. And because she was willing to do it, I was willing to do it too. Not because I think it's a great idea and I've got good use of your time to go through these courts. I did it for a couple years recently with this bogus felony charges around the 75 River Street.
Yeah.
Anyway, caller, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm taking up your time.
Well, no. I was just, I'm interested in I respect your bravado there. I don't know. From what I understand, the current situation with the homeless shelter, it's still pretty mixed up here. They're talking about getting some of the day services back in a weeks to come or something like that, but nothing's definite here. And I haven't seen any statements as far as anything in writing, so I don't know where they're at with that.
Yeah.
And of course, I had quite a conversation with Shelley McKintrick yesterday evening. And about the only thing she has to offer the 17 people, which I'm included, that have gotten these eviction notices.
Let me interrupt you, Andy, because people should know who you are. You are on the air. You're a resident of the Page Smith Community House, and you received an eviction notice along with 16 other people?
Yeah, right. And we're all elderly. We're all disabled. And we've been given a date of July 5th to hit the streets, actually. So the only solution that the director has for this is to put us back in the loft when it reopens. But, you know, that's the problem here. They keep people for 18 months in transitional housing. They don't find housing for them, and they rotate them back into the loft or back into River Street, and they get into this homeless cycle all over again. You know, this needs to be solved here and now. But I don't see any solution to this until Santa Cruz has some type of government low-income housing that's available to the homeless. I mean, that's the basic solution to this problem.
Yeah, or to the community generally. I mean, low-income housing seems to be an important thing. But, you know, you have to wrest these properties from the grip of the wealthy who are, you know, who love to use Santa Cruz as a money-making opportunity. In whatever kind of bubbles and bank foreclosures this kind of activity ultimately results in, and not to mention the immiseration of people who need housing and don't need to see houses being, you know, and property being kept unused and buildings being kept vacant because some people can profit off of this by doing this, by sitting around and waiting for, you know, more wealthier folks from, you know, Silicon Valley to come a-knockin'.
Well, you know, I keep waiting for Don Lane and the gang to kind of step into the arena here.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't wait for Don Lane. That's a big mistake.
Yeah. Boy, everybody's quiet, you know, Monica Montez and the gang.
Well, you know, Andy, I'm about to read. Actually, I think I will interrupt the exciting narrative of the, you know, the police tromping around out there today, which I'll play more of. But I'll read Janin Thomas's latest statement about this. Not, I don't know how, I was told it was a public statement, but I haven't seen it appear anywhere else publicly. But I put it out as a flyer today. Because it was told to me that it was a public statement, and so I'm doing that, and it should be a public statement if it, A, accurately reflects her view, and apparently it came from her, and B, if it is something that she's likely to continue to hold to, although it's not terribly encouraging even if she does. So is there more you want to say on this situation?
No, that's about it. I'm really interested in what she had to say. Because
I mean, can you hear? Are you at a radio, or are you when you shut down, will you not be able to hear?
If I shut down, I won't be able to hear.
Well, what I will do is I'll read it while you're still on the phone, so I'll do that right now.
Okay, and then I'll hang up, okay?
Yeah, or you can comment if you wish.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, and I also encourage Ray here to comment, because he's, although not a recent Page Smith resident, he's a person who's been around a lot and is keeping his eye on the situation. He has a lot of historical understanding of this, or at least experience with it. So here is... Let's see if I can find it. Here is her comment. A series of bullet points. Bullet. The county has offered the Homeless Service Center $66,000 to keep the mailroom open on a curtailed schedule, hopefully 5 days a week, 3 hours in the middle of the day, and move it to the front of the campus where the day services offices are. The county also made available $214,000 in CalWORKs money that can be applied to operation of the Reboli Family Shelter. This frees up like amount in unrestricted funding that can be applied to the Paul Lee Loft. Given a rough estimate of approximately $400,000 per year to run the loft, which is about $200,000 more than they're giving them, and all the services that support it, the money will buy up to 6 months of operation. Bullet. The importance of the loft, in addition to the lives it saves, is that closing it will make the HSC, Homeless Services Center, as they call it, ineligible to apply for ESG funds. I assume that's emergency shelter or some such thing, for the program in the future. It is critical to find sustainable funding for these services, starting with the $200,000 for the rest of 2016 for the Paul Lee Loft. Homeless Service Center is continuing in conversation with the county and city and is launching an individual donor campaign to try and fund the gap. The next bullet. HSC is already in the process of rethinking the kitchen to be a workforce development program and is moving forward with that plan. However, there are some upgrades that will need to be made to the kitchen facilities, costs unknown. I see they're going to upgrade the facilities while kicking out the people the kitchen is serving.
This,
and that's, you know, that's standard bureaucratic crap.
Yeah.
The winter shelter program remains the biggest and most serious unknown at the moment. The money provided to the HSC from the cities and county does not cover providing meals and showers for people who stay at the winter shelter. Homeless HSC needs to cover these costs and the additional staffing to accommodate 100 extra people on campus in order to continue operating the winter shelter. HSC is in conversation with the county and the city about options for the winter shelter. Bullet. Next bullet. Meals and showers are also a large problem. HSC believes volunteers will step up to try to meet some of the need, but they will certainly not have the intake expertise that HSC has. The Daytime Essential Services Center has served as HSC's fixed outreach site, and all people who access our services complete a coordinated entry assessment to help us determine what housing assistance is required. I always get very sarcastic when I hear this kind of language. Effectively identifying the issues... We don't have any place to live. And then the available resources and steps to housing, going through 14 bureaucrats and filling out 53 forms, is a complicated task. In short, HSC is going to need to find $200,000 to operate the loft for the remainder of 2016, additional funding for the winter shelter, because meals and showers won't be funded under the daytime programs as they were in previous years, and a sustainable source of funding for the kitchen and the hygiene bay. Reopening the loft is the highest priority. But nowhere here are they mentioning meals for ordinary walk-in people or services like laundry and showers for ordinary walk-in people. And even though many people refuse to get into the prison-like atmosphere or the homeless lack of services center, some do. And that number of people that is outside incredibly dwarfs the number of people who are actually getting in these programs. So there are 1,500 to 2,000 people outside in the city alone who are houseless. That's my estimate. And in the programs, what have you got? You got 46 in the Pauley Loft. You got, what, around 50 in the Page Smith? I don't know.
40.
You got maybe 32 in the River Street Shelter, and you got 90-some people, including maybe family, 27 families, I think it is, in the Rebel Lee Family Shelter. That is less than 15% of the homeless population. So the real services they're providing, there's no mention in Jan and Thomas's statement about continuing them. And I think that is a significant omission. What's your thought, Andy? What's your thought,
homeless
Ray?
People need food, clothing, and shelter. This woman needs to be, these people need to be fired. And as long as this current administration continues here, the same problems are going to exist with the homeless shelter. And this business of her, you know, when I heard her in the paper around Deanie Shaw's death and her saying that she really didn't know what was going on, you know, this has been the M.O. of Monica Montez and, of course, now with her. They really don't want to get involved with what it takes to run a homeless shelter. You know, and you get this very esoteric, these very esoteric high and mighty comments. But the basic thing here is food, clothing, showers, laundry, bathrooms. That's what we need.
You know? I mean, I would go further because it seems to me it doesn't matter who's running the thing. It really depends on the priorities of the board of directors that is above them and of the institution's real origins and structure and what it was set up to do and who it really responds to. This shelter was set up under the pretense, and I think it's not just, you know, a clever, calculated disguise. I think it is a self-delusion about people who are merchants, people who are police officers and judges and city council members, and some genuine philanthropist and a token homeless person. They have to put a token homeless person on the board, of course. But the objective was to get the fucking protesters out of the downtown area who were protesting against the sleeping ban 25 years ago. And so they established what's called free meal out here. And now the Citizens Committee for the Homeless originally ran the property that is now the Page Smith Community House. It was an open field called the Back 40. And that was where 100 people would put down their sleeping bags. And indeed, it became the place called the Coral Street Open Air Shelter in 1995, which was an area where people largely self-managed, though the Citizens Committee for the Homeless generously provided two porta-potties for 200 people. Thank you very much. And Karen Gillette of the Homeless Community Resource Center refused to allow her bathrooms to be used by that group. In other words, when homeless people try to run services themselves, they are cut off, ignored, criminalized, and dismissed by the city. And however, they did a relatively good job. Nobody died when the homeless were living in Coral Street Open Air Shelter, but it was shut down by the Rotkin Kennedy City Council and the Page Smith Paul Lee Citizens Committee for the Homeless. You see, the same bureaucrats whose names are on these buildings and who actually began with very good intentions. And back in the 80s, these guys were protesting, but they eventually became involved with city money and they had to make deals with the city and they closed their meetings to homeless people. And this is a process that it happens perennially in the whole political scene. And that's why, you know, people like Jefferson, the slave owner, who occasionally had some good things to say, the former president, and he was a slave owner, and he was a wealthy white slave owner. People should not forget that. He, you know, slavery was the reason we had the American Revolution. British abolished slavery in the mother country in 1772 under the Somerset decision, and the Southerners were scared shitless that this was going to hit the colonies. So it became a very good cause celebre for them to rebel. And that doesn't, you don't get that from the history books mostly these days. Anyway, Jefferson did say that, you know, from time to time, a revolution is going to be an essential thing. What generation ever existed without a revolution? The tree of liberty must be refreshed with the blood of patriots and tyrants. And I'm no fan of blood, and I'm no fan of violence, but That's what he said, and that's what is being used all the time to control people, the threat of violence. It happened to us today out there on Highway 1 and Highway 9. The underlying threat was, we're going to kidnap you and lock you up and take away your money and take away your possessions and steal your job. This is what happens when people get thrown into the court system. So, and it all because we are advocating for fundamental changes. And this is really getting back to what I was talking to you about before. I don't think it's Monica Martinez, that's her last name, Martinez, by the way, the former homeless lack of services center director, who's now with this new program that she's getting paid more for. I'm not sure what the hell it's called. It starts with an E.
Encompass,
thank you. Encompass Services. Or, you know, the newcomer, Janan Thomas, who comes fresh in from Atlanta with a fresh young face and all this stuff. And, you know, I hear a lot of people are sympathetic, saying, well, this poor woman, she got her grants cut off, what can she do? Well, the problem is people get into these services with the delusion that they're helping homeless people without looking at the broader situation in the town. The real issue is this providing shelter for the majority of homeless people? Is it providing a dignified environment for people to actually deal with issues like the fact of lack of jobs?
This has become a farce. Is what it's become.
Well, it always was a farce. See, that's the point. It was never any different. People believed it was different. I mean, because originally there were some more people who were closer to the ground. Although originally, Karen Gillette, who started this program, took it away from the protester, Jane Immler, who really began serving meals and getting arrested for it. And the city got tired of seeing headlines about people getting arrested, so they stopped arresting people, and they realized they had to create some alternatives to draw the homeless out of the downtown area. And
hey, I'd like to speak to the grant thing. Now, this is what I was told about those grants. They applied for 4. They usually get 2. They got none this time, and they failed because the grants were improperly done, and that this place failed on points because of the way it was run. So I don't know about this poor Jana Thomas business. If this place would have been run correctly, if they would have been filled out correctly, they probably would have gotten the grant.
Well, you know, I think that may well be. I don't know. But I know that this grant-grubbing approach, where you're seeking government money, and in so doing, you're required to suddenly invade the privacy of every homeless person who arrives there in order to get all kinds of information about them. It really kind of works well, unfortunately, in collusion with the Take Back Santa Cruz agenda, which is to get the majority of any kind of homeless services out of here because they regard them as a criminal draw. Ironically, of course, folks with a criminal record who are being released from jail but not given any housing are, you know, being thrown into the center because the jails, first of all, they criminalize a lot of people to start with that shouldn't be there, but second of all, there's lawsuits against the jail that have been, you know, successful that shown that the medical services they provide are killing people in the jail or the lack of medical services.
You know, we take on a lot of AB-109 people down here.
Well, that's the point. The point is that because the prison system is killing people and they decided, oh, we better release people fast because the court ordered it 15 years ago and we haven't done it yet, and they have to create, instead of releasing them directly and saying, you know, get into it, instead of spending the money on building new jails and building instead some housing for people coming out of jail, they're throwing people into the homeless lack of services center and other similar agencies, I imagine. So that does create more of a problem for people who are running these services. But the services aren't interested in providing housing. They never were.
There's been no actual transitional housing down here for years. I mean, any really dedicated service for that. Just like for getting people back into work and whatnot. I mean, that's all a farce. That's all, you know, advertising. It doesn't go on down here. So, I don't know.
I appreciate your call, Andy. I'm going to play some more of this audio and give another caller a chance to call. And I don't think the 469-3119 number is working, but this one is 427-3772. And thank you for calling in.
Hey, thank you, Robert. It's always nice talking with you.
All right, man. Okay, come to the meeting on Sunday. That's
okay. I'll try.
You know, 6:30, and we're going to be, you know, scheming and planning and, you know, getting together. So.
Cool beans.
All right.
Take care.
All right. And that's in front of the post office downtown Santa Cruz. And let's hear some more from the crime scene today. You know, everyone was trespassing. But first, we have another caller, because callers come first. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, this telephone is working.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. And you will be working, too, apparently. Aren't you the infamous Uncle Dennis who just
hung up on me?
Yes, apparently so.
Uncle Dennis does have a show tonight, and it's going to be at 8 o'clock. It's called From the Cream to the Dregs. And if you're tired of all the talk, you'll be able to hear some decent music, or perhaps some indecent music. It's from the 60s and 70s. So stay tuned for Uncle Dennis when he comes on. Now let's hear from Uncle Robert and more from the 10 to 11:30 police jubilee that was happening down at Highway 1 and Highway 9 at taxpayer expense.
So it is about 10 o'clock. We have a Sergeant Bush is here, two Highway Patrol vehicles. And we have Officer Rue and Sergeant Bush. Rue, the Highway Patrol, is here. Hi, how's it going? Sergeant Bowles?
Yes, sir.
I'm Robert. How you doing?
Hey, Robert.
And that's another Highway Patrol officer that's arrived while I'm trying to whip out some chairs and set up a protest. It's not quite clear what the property is. We moved the protest over a bit, apparently, from where it was before. How's it going, man? Hello. And we have about 10 people here. Hey!
Good morning. Hey, sorry I'm late. I was
stopped for a speeding ticket.
Oh, shit. That's all right.
Yeah.
Sorry for the rerun, folks.
Something exciting?
I'm just trying to hold up signs and eat at the same time.
And you need a napkin for your chin. Okay. Morning. Hey, no smiling downtown.
I know.
Come on now.
Probably a muni code violation.
Yeah, well.
And this is really where we came in. Sorry for the repetition, folks.
Sort of. Yeah.
Work for you.
Well, in order to deal with the ever-present technical problems, we're going to take a breather, and I'll be back. So tune in and call in, 427-3772. Were you down there today at the police jubilee? Call in and let us know what you think. Have you been displaced in this situation? Are you concerned about what's going on? Do you want to support the community campout that's coming out a week from Sunday? Let me know.
All week long I work in the shop. I work and work and never stop. Get up at 6 and go to bed at 9. But the day I think is the best is Sunday, that's my chance to rest. The only day that you might say is mine. We leave our hot and stuffy flat. There's one place that we know, and Subway to the public park. Oh, that's the place to go. On Sunday in the park, all week long we keep on looking forward to the happy things we do. It's such a lark on Sunday in the park.
Just don't be homeless Sunday in the park, and don't be there after dark, okay? And not in Santa Cruz. Let's get back to Highway 1 and Highway 9 today, the emergency breakfast, and the police response, and our response to the police response, and maybe your response to all of this. 427-3772.
So it's about 10:15, overcast. Police car is still up the road, but apparently not hassling. And we're talking with, what's your name?
Dave.
And Dave, you've got a
You got a backpack and a tarp on your back and a bag in your hand and a coffee in the other hand and a hat on your... We got all kinds of stuff. What?
They tell us we have to move. Just get arrested.
They told you that we have to move?
No, they do. I'm just going to say just arrest me.
Okay, well, to stand with you then. Abby's making a strong stand.
This is where Abby Samuels decided she was not going to be denied her basic right to use the public space and be driven away, and she was going to stay. If they wanted to arrest, they could arrest her. And she was quite clear about this, and I decided I would go with her, though I was, you know, not too happy about the idea of doing it, but, you know, that's what you have to do sometimes. She's also written about this, and I'm going to interrupt this to read a little bit of her account so you can get her on-the-scene perspective. Although I want to actually make sure that she wants this to go out publicly. I think she does, but let's hear some more. I'll give her try to give her a call to be sure that I'm not revealing any confidence. I don't think so, because I think she sent this originally to Sentinel reporter Jessica York, who didn't show up down there because she was on another assignment. A photographer did from the Sentinel, but by that time everyone had left, and it was only an hour and a half long scheduled for, and we essentially went through, I think we went through most of the food and much of the coffee. Police presence may have driven away a number of people. Well, what do you think about that, Ray? Did the cops deter people from using the services?
Absolutely. If there was even one smile only, it would have made quite an improvement. That it was a situation where people thought, uh-oh, if I say or do anything, I'm going to get arrested. It was not a comfortable feeling. I was upset all morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think, see, particularly homeless people who are worried about, and that's one of the problems of the homeless lack of services center, the increasing security and police stuff tends to make more and more people who have these bogus criminal records insecure. I'm not talking about the guy who attacked you, Ray. I'm talking about people, you know, who are getting all kinds of citations for bullshit stuff, which is happening around town and has been for decades. Stay away orders from the parks, although not as many as I feared, but still they're happening. Tickets for being in a park after dark, tickets for smoking, all this shit. Mm-hmm. So here's a little of from Abby's account. I'm going to read at least selections from it. When I got there, she writes, about 9:30, that was about half an hour before I arrived, there was one CHP there. I wonder how he got notified so early. He asked us to move our tables down the street and out of his jurisdiction. He was very polite. In fact, he supported Food Not Bombs in what we do, letting us know during his childhood he experienced being homeless a lot. He actually was very kind. He asked us to simply get a permit, and the process was quite simple. I proceeded to tell him we don't get permits, and our permit was our First Amendment. We were protesting the criminalization of the homeless. So we moved our five tables about 30 feet down, which when I got, this is my interjection, this was somewhat away from the a really visible intersection, which was unfortunate. This officer, when his sergeant came, they said they had jurisdiction over the whole area, so everybody had to move out of there completely, including the sidewalk. So it wasn't, you know, one wonders where they're getting their facts about parcel lines and everything else. I think Pat and John Colby, who were videoing the situation, had those comments about where's the evidence that we're on any kind of restricted property. It wasn't the case, apparently, back in Monday and Thursday of last week. In any case, continuing with Abby's thoughts, he said he would ask the sergeant if that was the Highway Patrol's jurisdiction. The sergeant arrived and told us it was still within their jurisdiction. Even though we explained we'd be leaving in about an hour, around 11 a.m., they said they would be writing out tickets for trespassing and taking our food away. I frantically started making phone calls since I didn't want our arrest to be all for nothing. At that point, I asked someone to move the literature table back in a more prominent position to the original place and said I may as well set up here waiting to get arrested. I made sure Sammy, my dog, was safe, that the most important items would get packed away with Robert's help. Hey, that's me. Thanks, Robert. I would say about 20 cops lined up down the sidewalk on Route 9. Then Lee came by and suggested to move our tables to the sidewalk, so we did.
At that point, the police moved away, conferred, asked to speak to me and others, and explained they would be leaving, and if they get a call complaining about blocking the sidewalk, they would come back and try to work it out with us. They also asked if we would be having another breakfast next week, and I told them we didn't have any plans, but I'm not in charge. The group may decide differently, but I wasn't aware of any plans for a breakfast next week. I told them I was sorry they wouldn't be arresting me because I was sure looking forward to having an interesting press day with pictures of them taking away food for the homeless. They smiled, shook hands, and thanked us for being polite. Now I know everyone will have their own version of what happened. This is my experience. This is Abby. A bit from what Abby wrote some of us. And so I will be reading more if I get Abby's permission to read more from this. I think that really is kind of, I'm hoping that won't require any concern on her part. But let's hear some more from my own narrative. And who knows, maybe some of this stuff will be posted on YouTube later as well. Because a number, at least one person was taking video, that was John Colby, and maybe others as well.
And John, you said you had something. Hang on a second here.
It's basically to start moving out. That's what the sergeant from the Highway Patrol told me. So they're shutting this down.
Well, then I will get arrested.
That's Abby speaking.
Stay right here, but I'm not asking anyone else to do it.
Hmm. Let's see what we can do. I can. I don't know if they'll let me into the women's jail, though. But
I'm just going to stay right the hell here.
Right. So here come a couple of Highway Patrol officers.
Table. Can someone help me move the table right there?
So yeah.
Right where I really want it.
Okay. So we got a couple of Highway Patrol officers here.
So what we're asking is that you folks move to a safe location, which we believe is in front of the shelter there, the old shelter that everybody's here for, basically. Remaining here would be a violation of trespassing on state property. This is a state easement either side of Highway 9 and Highway 1. We'd like to cooperate with you and help you move, even if necessary. I can carry stuff and stuff back in the truck.
Since it doesn't matter whether we're there or there, I'm going to move my stuff over here and happily get arrested. And whoever else is willing to get arrested with me, but I'm sure there's other people that won't.
So the first step would be requesting that you folks leave. If that doesn't happen, we will issue citations. From that point
on. That's fine. Okay. I'm happy with citations.
Under at what level was this made? What level of authority?
You don't move, you're going to go to jail.
Sergeant Bowles is pointing to.
Sergeant Bowles.
Here's the other thing.
We
want
to talk to you from that.
Yeah, you guys talk about it. No stress here.
I'll go to jail.
Here's the other thing. The food will be left behind, okay?
The Sergeant Bowles.
Unfortunately, we don't store food, okay? We don't want to throw away this food. Your best best option is to let us help you move down there. We're going to help you do it safely, but you can't stay here.
And we pause for another phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert Ray and the Highway Patrol, of course.
Highway Patrol is there, too?
Well, in they're here in spirit. We're playing the audio.
Oh. So, can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, because I have you on speaker. We were just trying to, I guess Kevin and I have a real different...
Who is calling in here? Who's calling in?
Colby.
Hey, Pat, you were there with your brother, and he was videoing, and you were serving, I guess, coffee and food and your own homemade potatoes?
Yeah, and also, I was trying to just channel Keith McHenry and just say, we got a permit. It's called the U.S. Constitution. Leave us alone. But some people are saying that the police happily left and let us, you know, once
and
we
they were nice.
Moved on the table and they were really nice. And my take was they were trying to shut us down the whole time. And then when we showed that we were out of food and we were undoing it and we moved the tables on the sidewalk, which made it more dangerous, then they left. But I don't think at any time were we ever a safety hazard because it's started out as a safety hazard, and then it was we were trespassing, and then there was trespassing, and then the sidewalk belonged to Caltrans. It was like the story was forever changing. You want to add anything, John?
No, that's it.
Yeah, that's what we saw.
Now, do you did some video on this, at least John did, Pat. Is that in any shape that can be posted and shown to the community?
It's going to take time because it's like an hour.
Over an hour. They were there for over an hour.
How
many officers there were? There were more officers, it looked like, if you look at the photos, than there were homeless people or other people in the area that they were saying was unsafe.
Yeah. Well, that's often the case. Indeed, yes.
Walking the sidewalk that they said that Caltrans was supposedly owned. So
the homeless guy had to trespass to get home.
Right, and a homeless man had to trespass and go on Caltrans property to get around the police officers who were obstructing the sidewalk.
Yeah, well, the police officers were not really making, and the police officers weren't doing anything except standing around. The highway patrol that was initiating all this did not attempt to remove anybody forcibly from Caltrans. What they called was their property or their easement. But in fact, they were threatening people with, the arrest as a way of, again, establishing their authority and moving people away, is my impression. Go ahead.
Have 10 minutes to basically show that you're leaving or you'll be cited for trespass. That's what the sergeant Morris
Yeah,
said.
they made numerous threats, and I think one of the things they did also, and you'll be hearing this on the tape coming up, that the sergeant said he would go around and check out his new theory that we should all move in front of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, where we actually did do a protest about a month before, and the Homeless Services Center refused to allow us to even be right outside their gates, and a police officer insisted we not block the 4-foot wide sidewalk.
He also asked them if we could do it on their property, and of course they said no to that too.
Right. So, I mean, there was a lot of, I would say that the strategy that some people used, I think, was simply, doing the natural thing, continuing to ask questions, continuing to serve people food and coffee, continuing to give out literature, continuing to let the community know that the police department, and because it was there in massive numbers, including the police chief, and the California Highway Patrol were engaging in an act of pretty nasty, however politely done, repression.
Right, it was repression, and they were there for over an hour, and at some point, Chief Vogel was there. He was conferring with Sergeant Jonathan Bush. There were about three CHP motorcycle officers. There were CSO Jenna, Lieutenant Barry, Sergeant Bush, Aldridge, Pendleton. There was a lot of personnel there. They were trying to intimidate us.
Right. You're citing the Santa Cruz Police Department personnel.
They actually
didn't tell us they were going to do anything. It was the Highway Patrol that was doing the major, get out or get arrested stuff.
The police were making it as if they were part of this.
Yes.
From their standpoint. Why were they there? Why were they there if we weren't on city property? If it was Caltrans property, why were they even there? Why was Chief Vogel there?
And because we saw it was a safety hazard, where we had originally.
Well, these are good questions, John. I'm gonna get back to the audio though, unless there's more you want to pass on.
That's it. Let me pass you to Pat.
All righty.
Yeah, that was basically. I think we're seeing it because I'd like to know what the safety issue is. There's always pedestrians. The tables made it more dangerous that people could fall off the sidewalk and get hit by a car.
You mean once the tables were moved onto the sidewalk at the insistence of the highway patrol?
Right. That created a safety hazard, in my opinion. And then when they blocked the sidewalk, they made it even worse.
You know, with their bodies, you mean the cops and the highway patrol, yeah. Anything else?
Anyway. No, that was about it. But I think Kevin and maybe Abby aren't happy with my opinion of the situation, but happily people got fed and we ran out of food.
You know, I mean, different folks have different views. Don't, you know, there's no need for everyone to have, everyone has a different set of eyes and a different heart, so we view it differently. That's fine. I'm glad you gave your perspective. I'm going to roll on you.
Yeah, I just got a long posting lecture from Kevin, so I thought it was interesting.
Okay, well, we can bicker about that one later. I'll talk to you later.
Meeting. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye. And now here's some more audio from the incident, which apparently draws different, opinions even from activists, although I think we're all agreed that there's a huge, and rather alarming display of police power, unnecessary police power. You were there too, Ray. Was that your view?
Yes. Yeah, I was not impressed. It kind of upset my whole morning.
If you take all of our food, that's fine. I'm sure.
This is Abby.
I'm sure the public would love to see that you're taking all the food that could otherwise go to people that need it.
We tried to set up in front of the homeless service, and it's only a 4-foot sidewalk. You can't do it there.
We're in the parking lot.
They won't let us in the parking lot. They don't want us inside.
Are you sure about that?
Well,
can we go over there and try to work it out.
Yeah, you can try. You can try and do that if you want.
Let me go down there and we'll work it out. Okay? Right.
I can't speak whether they'll accept that, but that so far they haven't allowed that.
Okay.
So work on that. Meantime, eat up, folks. Eat while you can.
Are we leaving?
Not yet, but there may be a confrontation coming. So enjoy your food while you can.
You got it.
Giving us a little.
Can you help me move my table?
Where do you want to move to?
Right where in the corner, where if it doesn't matter whether we're here or they're there, I'd rather be right where the people can see us.
Okay, hang on. We're going to move the table back into the more prominent spot.
And the sergeant's attempt to go find out whether the homeless lack of services center would allow us to move the table and all the stuff into inside the homeless services center, which of course would defeat the protest. The protest was designed to be visually apparent to the community, and their community isn't inside the gates, the locked gates behind security patrols of the homeless lack of services center. It's driving by on the highway, and so that would be ridiculous. But, it would give us access to the clients, which is fine. They would have an opportunity to come forward and eat and so forth. But the real issue here, if you notice it, is if there really is a safety concern, and if there is a concern about trespass where there is a problem with people being there in a First Amendment activity, if there's any kind of, real danger, the fact that the sergeant would take 15 minutes out to go around and chat with the homeless service center about moving the thing instead of instantly making arrests or demanding people leave because it's a real problem shows you that it's politically motivated. It doesn't have much to do with any real immediate on-the-ground concerns. That's my thought when I hear this.
Hang on just 1 second. Let me stop this machine.
And here we're moving the table back to the original place.
We moved the table, and there are now, it's another
Abby
it's like
to
a,
be arrested
a police
if necessary.
Officer, fire officer. Steve has arrived. Steve, what's your name, Steve, again?
Steve Lazo.
Steve, you're in a wheelchair, but you're here.
I'm here. I managed to get 100 yards.
And there's food here still. You're chunking away. People are sitting and eating, and they're being accused of violating, Caltrans or Cal property trespass, and my car, they always move my car, which I haven't done yet. And people are here, come and get it! Have some food! Stop the shutdown of the services! And sign our petitions before they haul us away.
And again, a slight technical difficulty. My apologies to folks. I'm going to try to get back to where we are, which is always a problem with a device that I'm not entirely comfortable with. And I'm going to have to get to it.
Oh, I think we're okay. Steve Laszlo is an activist, and I guess he's in the Pauley Loft or the Page Smith Community House. He's in a wheelchair, and 2 years ago he was thrown out because he was attempting to shower in one of the showers in his wheelchair, and that he was violating some policy they had. And the woman who was trying to help him, Andrea Morgan, was also thrown out and banned. And we talked about that on the air at that time, 2 or 3 years ago, maybe even more. An issue in these protests is if people in wheelchairs or with serious disabilities show up, and this is a somewhat opportunistic calculation, but it is true and something to consider, it makes it much more difficult for the police to make arrests because they're going to have to do disability provisions for the people they arrest, including, and Steve Laszlo said this, if they arrest me, they're going to have to put me in my wheelchair into in a proper, you know, cage or whatever and haul me away and so forth. So this might have been one of the considerations that further delayed the police and allowed us a little time to serve the fewer people who were not intimidated by the arrival of the police. And here's some more.
Watch out, Ray. They may confiscate everything on this property. They're claiming it's Cal property, and we're trespassing. That's what they're saying now.
Okay.
So just keeping you advised.
So I'll block the sidewalk.
Fair enough. So, we have a more senior Highway Patrol officer talking to. Is it Officer Aldrich? It's ETO Aldrich. I don't remember what.
That's what I always assume myself.
Now that needs to be propped up so it doesn't fall on the street there.
Yeah. I think it's okay now.
So. Well, this is my private protection in case anybody tries to attack me.
I'm glad to see you finally went digital.
Well, kind of.
Waste of all that resources on the tapes, you know?
Well, traditional, you know, it's traditional. Now, are you an officer, a sergeant? What are you these days?
I'm an officer.
You are an officer.
This is Officer Aldrich.
I was looking for, you know, stripes or something. That doesn't matter. I don't think any less or any more of you than...
No offense taken.
Well, I do.
Well, there you are. See, rivalry, but you are yourself... Officer Crouch? Deputy Crouch?
Crouch of the Highway Patrol is another
fair
individual
enough.
There.
Well, have some food. Remember, before we all get taken away to the Hooskow. Hopefully not, but you never can tell. Food's pretty good, actually. So you can sign a petition here if you want. Protect homeless survival in Santa Cruz. Sign our petition. You can also say no to the attempt to shut down homeless parking on these streets. And this is for, if you want to do some volunteering for HUF. And I'm now standing more where I was about a week ago at the same spot when there was no problem on the Thursday a week ago and the Monday a week ago when we were here. Everything was fine. Now suddenly Highway Patrol is claiming there's a traffic hazard. My car is still parked here, and Chief Vogel has arrived. My goodness. Hey, John. Chief Vogel. Yeah. So, Elise is putting up flyers in other spots so people can see them. And we are exercising our First Amendment rights. We actually have a female Santa Cruz police officer here in training. All right, who's in charge here? You or you? I want to know what's going on.
It'll be the man over there.
No, no. I mean, but here in this section, this sector, this... no.
We're all officers.
I just want to make sure that women are getting the same amount of respect in the police department as the silver-haired, taller guys, you know. I mean. So what's your name? Robert, obviously, eventually. Yeah, you're sort of out of uniform. You got a badge, but you, where's your outfit?
I have it not here.
But more comfortable, I guess, this way for sure. A lot of heavy equipment people are carrying. Anything I can help you with? Thank you. Come and sign a petition before we get hauled away, please. Sign our petitions here. You want to stop the shutoff of services? Sign a petition. Come and sign a petition. You can do it. I'm sure the police will not interfere with your First Amendment rights.
Was there any warning given yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
We need reinforcements there. It looks like an unruly crowd. Maybe you can call in, I don't know, the FBI? Another police officer has arrived.
It's not a safe spot.
We've done it for 2 weeks and there was no problem. Suddenly it's a problem.
I know, but it's dangerous.
Well, with the police officers blocking the sidewalk, yes, I would agree, it's dangerous. Or at least cumbersome. Looks like we have, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? 6 squad cars counted, lined up one after another. It's about time you showed up. We need some control here. Another Highway Patrol officer has shown up in full regalia. He's looks like a motorcycle officer. We don't have enough food to feed all you police officers. I'm sorry. You come back later, it's possible.
You guys are just like idle to create the traffic distraction with all your vehicles parked out there by the roadway, unlike an ordinary citizen. That's not state authority.
So here comes a sergeant who... Have you got any new information, Sergeant, on homeless?
Yeah, they're not going to let you move.
Thank you for trying. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
So the sergeant attempted to get the Homeless Lack of Services Center to let us do our business, literature, food, and so forth, inside the Homeless Lack of Services Center. We can't really do that. So we're trying to figure out what's going on. So it looks like I'll make an announcement to the crowd. So, announcement, everybody. So it looks like a highway patrol sergeant tried to get the Homeless Services Center, which I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center, to allow us to come in and do our business inside there if we wanted to, which many of us don't. And the sergeant found out they would not let us do that. So the Homeless Service Center doesn't like this kind of a protest either. Even though some people in it are supportive of them. It's kind of ironic. But so far, it's okay. They haven't given us a warning to leave yet, though some people, Abby, who is the Food Not Bombs main person, has declared she's not going to leave. They could take her to jail if they want, and I suppose I will probably have to go along, you know, just for the hell of it. So, there is, but no one is threatened with arrest yet. They should be giving you a warning. And we have flyers. We have flyers over here and petitions if you want to sign to support direct action against this situation. Abby?
Do you have Alex Darcy's number so we can get him over here?
Yeah, but not on me is the problem. Wait a minute. Let me call
Do you
home.
Have Alex Darcy at KCWC.com and...
Alex Rosie of Indy Bay. We didn't actually get a lot of reporters out there in time, but we did have one video.
Would you consider moving to Coral Street along the sidewalk for report? Okay. If we issue a citation, are you going to refuse to sign it?
I don't know, but I'm happy to get arrested.
Are you going to continue to stay here when we tell you to leave? Okay,
yes.
So we're not going to issue a ticket. We'll just place you under arrest, okay?
Well,
I'm going to inform everyone here that will happen to them as well, okay?
And strategy tips for activists: don't tell the police what you intend to do. Say, I'll make that decision when the moment comes up. I'm hoping we can avoid that. That's always the best kind of strategy. You don't want to let them know what's happening. Abby is a very vigorous worker, but, you know, she hasn't been arrested a lot. So that would be my advice to anyone doing it, and her included. They can do what they want to do. You can keep your own counsel and keep your options open too. You may decide to do otherwise, and what they want to do. There are a lot of people who feel that being arrested is a waste of time because you get thrown into a system that is weighted against you. I mean, the idea that civil disobedience will bring out everybody's conscience and we're all going to, you know, come together in peace and light, and you know, the community will stand up for you. Is not often the way the system works, because people are distracted by lots of other things and the system is able to vilify and criminalize you before you even get a chance to get your story out. But often one has to risk the arrest situation if one is to even hold one's ground, much less reclaim property stolen from the community by large corporate interests, state agencies with bureaucrats who are concerned about maintaining large corporate interests or their own privileges and priorities. I'm not going to be able to finish this particular audio. I will play more of it on Sunday when I'm hoping to get a longer discussion of Berkeley from Carol Denny, the activist you heard earlier. Maybe have another guest in the studio. You never can tell. It's possible Ray may show up again. He may come on down if he is entirely bored with all this stuff. And again, on Sunday evening, there is a mass meeting in preparation for the community campout that is slated to begin a week later. So get involved. Call HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Get involved with Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. There's an 800 number, 800-575-770. And what are the other digits of that damn number? I'll have to. If you want to call Food Not Bombs, call HUFF first, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will give you the Food Not Bombs number to call so you can get to them directly. They're also online if you go to Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs Facebook page, or if you just Google for Food Not Bombs, you should be able to find their 800 number. Ray, I want to thank you for being in the studio with me today. You've been largely a strong silent